Six Music.
BBC Radio, Six Music Documentaries.
Welcome to The First Time with me, Matt Everett. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. Now, The First Time rarely covers artists with just three albums, but my guest this week is such a singular and interesting musician that her story demands telling. She emerged from the grimy indie scene of East London to become a full-blown international superstar with the release of her debut album Lungs in 2009 and its follow-up Ceremonials in 2011. It's been years since we've had a performer with her flamboyance, her eccentricity and her voice. My guest on The First Time this week is from Florence and the Machine, Florence Welsh. Here Florence talks about her musical life, a fascination with the music of Disney's The Little Mermaid, and her experiences singing in church and how that helped form her musical tastes. We also chat about her obsessions with Eminem, Green Day, Nick Cave, and bizarrely, The Corrs. We also talk about her first Glastonbury, how she dealt with the 3 years of non-stop touring and huge American success that followed, and the pressures and expectations surrounding the release of a third album, How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful, which is coming out in June. But I started by asking Florence, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time she was aware of music?
I think it was probably Disney movies and learning the songs from them. And I think Ariel had a really big impact on me. I think that's the first film I ever went to see. And it's interesting because that's all about her voice as well. She loses her voice.
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me.
But I think also singing in, I think, before, I think singing in school assemblies, really, like singing hymns in school assemblies and singing hymns at church at school.
So do you think the mixture of the theatrical of Disney and the kind of religious of
church... That's what my album sounds like. That's what all my records sound like, so yes.
What about the first single that you had?
The first single I remember buying myself on CD was Eminem, I'm Slim Shady.
My name is, yeah.
My name is, yeah, my name is.
That's a very cool start. How old were you then?
I must have been... When did that come out? I must have been maybe like 11?
Did you have any dodgy records before then?
I had The Cause on tape. I loved them, and I had the Spice Girls record on tape. I remember the tapes that I had. The Cause, which really weirdly, now we're talking about this, I had a dream about this all last night. I had a dream about all my old Cause, because I stuck the album, like, I mean, I had a Coca-Cola CD player. I was really little, but I stuck the album sleeve on the wall, The Cause. But that, I mean, I did listen to, like, No Doubt, and then I got into American Skate Punk, and Dookie was the first record that I bought.
That's a good record.
But yeah, before that, there was a bit of The Cause in there.
What did you like about Eminem?
I mean, well, it's just that song was amazing. I think it was just sounded so different, and I think it really struck me as like an 11-year-old. I just was like, this is good.
Do you like Primus?
Yeah,
wanna
yeah.
see me stick 9-inch nails to each one of my eyelids?
Uh-huh.
Wanna copy me and do exactly like I did? Uh-huh. Try sit and get messed up worse than my life is? My brain's dead weight. I'm trying to get my head straight, but I can't figure out which Spice Girl I wanna impregnate. And Dr. Dre said,
Slim Shady, you a basic. Why's your face red, man? You wasted.
Well, since age 12, I felt like a caged elf who stayed to himself in one space chasing his tail. Got ticked off and ripped Pamela Lee's lips off. Kissed him and said, I ain't no silicone, was supposed to be this soft. I'm about to pass out and crash and fall in the grass faster than a fat man who sat down too fast. Come here, lady.
Shady, wait a minute. That's my girl, dawg.
I don't give a damn. Dre sent me to take the world off.
Hi, my name is... What? My name is...
Wanted to flunk me in junior high.
Damn.
Thanks a lot. Next semester I'll be 35. I smacked him in his face with an eraser. Chased him with a stapler. And told him to change the grade on the paper.
Now,
walked in a strip club. Had my jacket zipped up. Served the bartender. And walked out with a tip cup. Extraterrestrial. Running over pedestrians in a spaceship while they're screaming at me.
Let's just be friends.
99% of my life I was lied to. I just found out my mom does more dope than I do. I told her I'd grow up to be a famous rapper. Make a record about doing drugs and name it after.
Hey, Mom.
You know you blew up when the women rush your stands. Try to touch your hands like some screaming Usher fans. This guy at White Castle asked for my autograph, so I signed it. Dear Dave, thanks for the support. Boss at.
This kid needs...
needs to be locked away.
Get him!
Dr. Dre, don't just stand there, operate. I'm not ready to leave, it's too scary to die. I'll have to be carried inside the cemetery and buried alive.
Whoa!
Am I coming or going? I can barely decide. I just drank a fifth of Kool-Aid, dare me to drive?
Go ahead.
All my life I was very deprived. I ain't had a woman in years, and my palms are too hairy to hide.
Whoops.
Clothes ripped like the Incredible Hulk. I spit when I talk, I fuck anything that walks. When I was little, I used to get so hungry I would throw fits. How you gonna breastfeed me, mom? You ain't got no tits. I lay awake and strap myself in the bed with a bulletproof vest on and tap myself in the head. So I'm steaming mad. And by the way, when you see my dad, ask him if he bought a porno mag and see my ad.
The first album you say was Dookie by Green Day.
Yeah, and I think that's also the first time that I thought of music, and not only as just music, but as an identity that you could have.
You
so,
mean-
the, well, because it was like the whole skate punk thing, and I started going to like ska gigs and going to like Download Festival and like getting. There was not only just would you listen to music, but it meant you fancied a certain kind of boy, you wore a certain, felt certain kind of clothes, you hung out with a certain kind of people, and you could congregate together in school. The same people, and like my three best friends then became the other three girls at school who dressed like teenage skaters, and you know we kind of bonded over that. And it you realize it was the first time I realized that music was an identity, not just music.
What was the first gig that you went to?
The Voodoo Glow Skulls at the Astoria.
The what?
The Voodoo Glow Skulls. They were a ska punk band.
Right.
But actually, my actual first gig, but I think my parents took me to it, so it's not... It was Nick Cave. Which is really good, but I didn't even, I'm such an enormous fan now. And I think then when I went, I just didn't even recognise that what an amazing opportunity that was. I think it just like washed over me. I mean, hopefully I like to think it had an impact in some level, but the first gig that I went to was the Voodoo Glow Skulls at the Astoria. And our friend's dad had to like sneak us in by wearing a suit and pretending he was like an A&R man. But they had brought all these kits. It was weird.
So you mentioned Nick Cave. When was the first time that you fell in love with Nick Cave's music? What was the record that made a big impact on you?
Do you know what? I've always been a fan, but this latest record has just completely blown me away. I think it was Jubilee Street that he took music to a place that I longed to to, that's where I want to get to. You know, when I'm listening to something or I'm making something, that feeling is what I'm looking for. There's songs sometimes make me have to just lie down, like, on the floor, and that I can't move. You know, you want to just be so, you're so overcome by them. And I've always had that feeling from, like, certain songs, and I think that that song just, it's so magical.
Street, there was a girl named Bee. She had a history, but she had no past. When they shut her down, the Russians moved in. I'm too scared to even walk on past. She used to say, all those good people down on Jubilee Street, they ought to practice what they preach. Yeah, they ought to practice just what they preach, those good people on Jubilee Street. And here I come up the hill, I'm pushing my wheel of love. I got love in my tummy and a tiny little pain. Catastrophe on a 60-pound chain. And I'm pushing my wheel of love up Jubilee Streets. I look at me now. I'm
The first band you were in, because there seems to be lots of different bands and different names and different kind of musical things. Where did it start? When was the first time that you took to the stage as a name on a flyer somewhere, I guess?
I started a band at school called Flo and the Roses, which my friend Rosie was in, and we wrote songs, and I wrote lots of dramatic love songs about breakups that hadn't happened because I'd never had a boyfriend.
Oh.
But I was already writing about the breakup. It was ridiculous. Like, it would be all this like pseudo romantic, like, and there's a, I remember there actually being a lyric like, it's so bad.
This is great. Go on.
And there's a rose on the table, and that's the last thing he gave me. I was in school.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
But I used to get into trouble for writing lyrics in library books, and I'd get sort of told off. But loads of really kind of really like heartfelt heartbreak songs about. I didn't ever have a boyfriend at school.
That's brilliant.
I didn't have a boyfriend until I was 18. Like, writing all of these like really sad songs, but none of it happened to me.
When was the first Florence and the Machine gig then? What do you remember from the first time that the early incarnation of what would be now?
Well, it was at a Christmas party, but actually my name then was Florence Robot is a Machine. That was the name of the band.
Right.
Because I had my friend Izza, who's still in the band, Izza Machine. She wrote Dog Days with me, and musically, that's kind of with her, it's where it all started. So we had been making music, and I was Florence Robot, she was Izza Machine. And there was like a big folk scene going on in London at the time. And I was at art college. I wanted to do music, but I was kind of, this band didn't exist. Like, Florence Robot is a Machine. It was just me. Like, there was no band. And I met Mairead, who went on to become my manager. I met her in this club, and I was really drunk, wearing a tuxedo. And I was talking about, and she ran club nights, and I was talking about this band. And she's like, yeah, we'll book you. I was like, great. And then I was on the bus, and I actually got the phone call from her being like, yeah, can you play our Christmas party? I was like, yeah, sure. But I mean, the band didn't exist. I didn't have any. So I had to get my friend Matt to come and learn, like, these songs. And it was basically just because of, like, this imaginary band. And then I actually had to get a band. And, yeah, we played. Mairead asked me to sing covers. She's like, can you sing covers? So I've got a few of my own songs. She was like, yeah, and do some covers as well. But we went, and we were supporting Kitty, Daisy and Lewis. It was a folk night. My dad came. There was eggnog.
So
it was a Christmas party. I didn't think I did any covers in the end. I only had four songs, though. Like, literally, like, that was it. And I bought some pop socks. I had, like, special, like, loafers that I was wearing all the time that were, like, I was going for a kind of, like, lost schoolgirl look at the time. And so I would walk on stage holding, like, books and my bag.
Theatrical, nice.
Yeah, and I'd bought some pop socks before, which were kind of added to the... but that, and that was, like, I don't know, I remember, like, that was almost like I had to do that. And then, yeah, I sang these kind of, I think in my head, because the songs were so violent, I think I wanted to even like make the look even more like vulnerable.
Why were the songs violent?
Well, it was all when it was Girl With One Eye, Kiss With A Fist, My Bulb Wants Coffins. All of my first songs dealt with like sort of really dark stuff.
Why?
Because I just had always been quite attracted to, like, you know, morbid kind of gothic fantasy. And especially, like, you know, around that time, especially when I was, like, in my teens and early 20s, it was, like, really just what I was into. And I was hanging out with a lot of Camberwell Art College, like, punk bands, and that whole sort of swashbuckling, like, drunk pirate gothic scene. And I was sort of in the middle of that. So I think these kind of gothic folk tales came out of it.
My boy builds coffins with hammers and nails. He doesn't build ships, he has no use for sails. He doesn't make tables, dresses or chairs. He can't call the whistle 'cause he just doesn't care. My boy builds coffins for
You're listening to The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and my guest this week, Florence Welsh from Florence and the Machine. And that track was Florence with the early song My Boy Builds Coffins, recorded for her very first Maid of El studio session for BBC Introducing in October 2008.
Six Music.
Six Music.
BBC Radio Six Music.
You hit me once, I hit you back. You gave a kick, I gave a slap. You smashed a plate over my head, then I set fire to our bed.
I'm Matt Everett, welcome back. This is The First Time on Six Music, the show where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And that song was Kiss With A Fist, the very first single released by Florence Welsh, my guest on this week's show. And the next first that we discussed was that first single and the instant impact that it had.
It was funny because actually, like, Kiss With A Fist, it was of a particular time in my life. Like I said, it was like, you know, I grew up in Camberwell and there was a big kind of punk scene and it was sort of feeding off those that Kiss of the Fist came about. But actually when I then started trying to make a record, I realised I didn't want to make songs that all sounded like that. It was of a particular time. It, for me, very much reminded me of like when I was 17, 18, kind of that feeling. And so I think it kind of had a moment, and then I think I knew quite quickly that I wanted to move beyond it or evolve from that genre. Weirdly, for this record, we've actually come back like much more to guitars and to kind of, because there's a purity to that song, and it's almost like I had to go so far away from it that I've almost on this record come back to maybe those more simple song structures that I started off with in the beginning. Because then I was like, I don't want to do anything that's simple. There's going to be like 100 drums. There's going to be a big gap here. It'll all come back in. It's interesting. I feel like it's coming back in a way.
Another very important first, as it's a place that means a lot to you, would be Glastonbury. You remember your first Glastonbury?
Yes.
Or no, I was there, but I can't remember a single thing about it.
Oh, my God. I'd never been, and we got booked to play the Guardian Tea Tent on Sunday morning.
What year is this?
And it was just me and Matt, who was my first guitarist.
2008?
And that was, I don't know, it was years ago. And I'd never been, so we're playing on Sunday, we obviously arrive Friday night. Mm-hmm. And I've got no tent, no wellies, I'm wearing boat shoes. I think, and then, you know, and whatever happens at Glastonbury for those 2 days happened. And so on the Sunday morning, that's fair, I woke up in somebody else's tent.
Pretty much in someone else's clothes.
And then had to be like frog marched through. And this was the Glastonbury that was a mud apocalypse Glastonbury. Had to be frog marched like through the mud to this tent on Sunday morning. And then Matt was like lost on the other side of the festival and we were going to completely miss our slot and he hadn't shown up. So Suggs, weirdly, I don't know why, but Suggs from Madness was there. And he did an impromptu impression of Mick Jagger for 15 minutes to stall time because I was crying backstage. Well, there wasn't really a stage. But yeah, I had to do the first half of the gig a cappella. And then Matt turned up and at first everyone was like, oh, where's your guitarist? And they went, it was awful though, because he'd like trudged through all the mud to get there. And then as soon as he got on stage, his whole guitar just like fell apart. So yeah, it was a muddy, muddy and chaotic first experience of Glastonbury. But have there been any other ones, really?
When Lungs came out, the first album, do you think you were prepared for the level of attention that it got? Because you say it's so much more of an expansive record than I think people thought they were going to get, and connected with a hell of a lot more people than I think would have been expected from your first incarnation.
Do you know, it's so hard to remember like how I felt about it, because it was such a blur. I can remember winning the Critics' Choice Award, And I didn't really think that much of it because I didn't know what it was, really. I was like, oh, that's so nice.
oh, thank you.
And then my boyfriend at the time, who's much more internet savvy than I was, went, I think this is a really big deal.
It's going to go off.
Yeah. The thing is about that time is that we were just touring so much, and it was the first time we'd ever, like, we had a rider, and we were allowed to just, like, drink and play music. But, you know, people were letting us do it. There was no idea that there would be a bigger thing in sight. Every day was just sort of about that gig and that. We were just in it, and it was all so exciting. And doing festivals for the first time, I mean, I don't quite know how we survived. Still, I don't. You're just, like, it's so excited that you get to play, I think.
When Ceremonials came out, that was your first American top 10.
Yeah.
And that's where things get a little bit unhinged, I guess, when you get that level of attention. I remember seeing you backstage at Glastonbury in 2010, and you kind of just looked dazed. You performed great, but it was a bit the man who fell to earth.
What gig was that? Was that the other stage?
Yes, it was.
Because that was more people I'd ever seen in my life. I remember, like, having a little weird, I had I can't, it's hard to even speak about it now. It's almost like I couldn't quite process it as it was happening. Because it was just so, like, it was so, it, you know, to go from, like, the tea tent, then I think it was the largest crowd the other stage has ever seen. And then I couldn't quite process it. I can imagine I might have been dazed. I didn't, like. Well, I came off because I couldn't remember it when I came off stage. No, I couldn't remember, like, being there. It was so much to take in. It was almost like my brain went, like, blank.
Was there a point when you're doing that touring, when you're in the States, when this record is kind of rolling behind you, the second album, did you kind of feel yourself, the grip on normal life, loosening a little bit?
It's fine if you keep doing it.
It's when you stop. That's
yeah,
the problem.
Honestly.
What happens when you stop?
You've got to build yourself completely back up again from scratch, and then you make a new record about it.
Neil Young, you've mentioned Neil Young as being somebody that you love. When did you first feel the love of
Neil? You know, I'm quite a late discoverer of Neil Young, but I'm one of those bores who then, like, goes round to everyone.
Have,
like,
you heard of this guy?
Have you heard of Neil Young? Like, yeah, we've heard of Neil Young. I remember I got into a conversation with Wim Butler about, like, pop music and how much I, like, love pop music, and we were kind of, you know, talking about it, and then to feel like I was like, but I love Neil Young.
I've got depth.
And I was spending a lot of time in LA, and I was thinking about, like, making a new record, and thinking about. And I just kind of just started listening to him so much. And, like, I just thought, look, his genius just dawned on me in this massive way. And then I just was instantly, like, a mega fan. And recently we actually got to play the Bridge Benefit, which is, you know, the concert he puts on in
his big annual charity
San Francisco, which was really incredible.
Did you meet him?
I did.
Was he as cool as you wanted to be?
So cool. And I went into his dressing room, because we sung a song together. We sung Southern Man, which is maybe my favourite song, and which was such a huge honour. And I went in and I sat down and I was like, oh, thank you. I was really nervous. He's like, it's so nice to meet you, Mr. Young. And he's like, yeah, it's really nice to meet you too. Because when I first heard your record, you know, I thought that you were a man with a high voice. He's like, it's so nice to meet you, you know, because I live in the mountains. And, you know, I was just like, hey, a man called Florence with a high voice. That's pretty punk. I was like, thank you, Grandpa Neil. But I mean, you know, he can think whatever he likes. I was just happy to be there. Southern men better keep your head. Don't forget what your good book says. Southern change gonna come at last. Now your crosses are burning fast. Southern men.
Bjork was somebody else that you have mentioned as being someone that you love a lot.
Do you know what was interesting is actually Homogenic, I think, has been a huge record for me, and that's what brought me to Marcus Drabs.
Okay.
I mean, of course, because I love Arcade Fire and he did a lot of their stuff, but really it was like, while I was writing, I had that year off, and I was writing a lot of stuff for the record, I was listening to Homogenic a lot, and it was just this, his understanding of kind of emotion, I think, on that record, because it's like produced in a very emotional way. And so I thought, you know, big female emotions, I've got some of them. I think they need some safe hands.
We've got How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. Is this record half going back, as you say, to the kind of stripped down sound before, and half kind of a reaction to going out and living in a tour bus for 3 years?
I always approach all of the record like, we're going to do a much more minimal, and then I'm like, but I want to add trumpets. So I inherently can't help being myself, and so it is still, you know, if you like Florence and the Machine, it's still a Florence and the Machine record, but I think what we concentrated on is kind of what Marcus Drabs managed to find in me is a difference, is almost like a different gear. You know, I love the big grand stuff, I love big drum sounds and the loud bits, the quiet bits, I can do that well, but actually what Marcus encouraged in me is almost to write from a simpler place, you know, like songs like Ship to Wreck kind of. At first I was like, I'd written it, but he really championed it and really wanted it on the record. I was like, but it's just like, it's just a song. Where's the trick? He's like, you know, no tricks, no, just, and that kind of almost simplicity and purity of songwriting, I think, is what he encouraged.
Are you happy with it?
I am actually really happy with it. I mean, you're always like, I think as an artist, you can't, the idea that something's finished means it has to be perfect, so nothing can ever be perfect, so inherently you're always like dissatisfied, but I'm as happy as I can be, I think.
And finally, what's the last song we should play? You get to pick something from your past or something brand new.
Oh, well, choice. I love Father John Misty's got a new record out and I love him so much. And there's a song on his latest record called The Ideal Husband, which I just think is amazing.
Then that's the song we should go out on. Thank you very much. It's good to speak to you.
BBC Radio 6.
Music.
6. Music.
Music. This is the Morning After Mix.
You're about to hear a shortened version of the Morning After Mix, a carefully curated playlist available in the BBC Sounds app. It's full of gentle songs for when you need a musical rescue or escape. To find the full version, just search Morning After in the app. But for now, enjoy the calm.